Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back to another episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. So today we have with us Kaylee McDevitt. And Kaylee is a registered dietitian specializing in nutrition for women's health. And she is passionate about empowering women to build health from a place of connection to self, to nature, and to community. So we are going to have an incredible conversation to really highlight and discuss some of the myths, beliefs, and topics that center around building a confident lifestyle from within when we start prioritizing our health and wellness and making that the forefront of how we build our life from the inside out. So I just want to welcome Kaylee, and I'll pass the mic to you to share a little bit more about the great works that you do.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to get to chat with your community. And like you said, I'm a dietitian that works in women's health, which when I started doing this about 10 years ago, that was kind of an unheard of thing to specialize in just serving women. And if you get into the nitty gritty of nutrition research, you'll quickly find almost none of it is done on women until very recently. And so when I was in school becoming a dietitian, I was meticulously applying everything I was being taught. I was like doing all the good, like low fat, low calorie stuff. I was doing all the hours of cardio, and I thought I would be this vision of health. And I was not. I was actually the farthest from that. So I finished my schooling feeling like an absolute fraud about being able to help people when I felt horrible. And specific to me, it was a lot of hormone health issues. So I ended up spending really all of my free time learning about women's health and how nutrition actually should be applied differently to women than it is to men, and really where a lot of the conventional nutrition advice was leading me astray. So pivoted away from a career in sports nutrition to women's health and started a private practice and really haven't looked back and love the opportunity to get to serve like high-performing women, whether that means big goals, big visions for their lives, whether they're business owners or they're moms and they're running a household, just helping women use food and lifestyle to really open up all the possibilities for them in their lives.
Oh, I love that. Yes, I can definitely relate to like so much of what you shared. And I know that our listeners can too, because, you know, I could almost speak for almost every woman. We've all done a diet at some point in our life. Yeah. We've all been told like, you know, you have to do this diet to lose the weight, or, you know, we have this competition or this goal, or we're getting married or whatever this is. And it's like, we have to now do our part to lose weight, to fit into something. So when you talked about, you know, kind of feeling like this fraud in this space, because you were doing all the things, but yet you didn't feel complete on the inside, right? You felt like something was lacking, something was off, something was different, but we're like, I'm doing my part. I'm doing the things. Why don't I feel it? Why don't I look it? What is this disconnect? And so I'd love a little bit more of that journey, if you want to share with our listeners some of that journey that led you to that self-discovery of understanding that there was a disconnect in how you went about now into the work that you do.
Yeah, for sure. So back then, and I think if you resonate with the trying diets and kind of just doing things to make your body look a certain way, you'll relate to the fact that you outsource the decisions of how to eat and how much and when to some set of rules that actually are totally separate from you. And it's separate from your hunger and fullness cues. It's separate from what might be going on with your hormones or even your activity. And so when I was doing that, I was kind of putting myself on the opposite team of my body. I was like trying to manipulate my body to look a certain way and to perform a certain way, but we weren't aligned on our mission because my body wanted to have nourishment so that it could make hormones the way that it was supposed to, so that I could have really healthy cycles, so that I could feel like my true self. And so I had this epiphany, you know, as I was digging through the information about women's health. And one of the epiphanies was that, wow, I've been in like 7 years of health-related education, and I don't actually know much about the menstrual cycle and hormones. And that was a major problem and flaw to the schooling curriculum. But the other epiphany was, you know, this body is so divinely created, so intelligent, knows exactly how to optimally function. Maybe I should align on the same side as it. And what would it look like to eat and move in a way that makes me feel good and that honors my own natural hunger and fullness cues and it totally changed the game for me because we were aligned on the same team, which means our forward progress was a lot more effective than when we were at odds. So I learned, you know, in order to support healthy hormone production and a healthy cycle, I needed to actually eat enough. You know, the female physiology is so rooted in safety, and we create safety through adequate energy availability. So eating enough, not restricting an intake of either total calories or specific macronutrients, and then totally reevaluating my relationship to exercise and using it as a way to add to my life, to build muscle, to celebrate movement versus a way to burn calories or, again, manipulate my body. And so those changes just honestly felt like I became a new person as a result of that, and hormones flourished. And ever since that happened, you just kind of feel like you have to scream it from the rooftops for other women that might be stuck in that place.
Yes, I love that you said, I feel like I became a new person. And if you think about it, you technically did, because you're feeding the cells that generate the overturn, and you're like, wow, this, I really am becoming a new person. And so I love that you talked about briefly in your journey, you know, you talked about the rules and beliefs, right? Because we have these preconceived notions of, you know, that food is almost our enemy. And again, I'm pulling some of my own experiences because I was led down that road. You know, some of the beliefs for me in that sense was like, you know, fats make you fat. Carbs are your enemy. Protein is going to make you manly and bulky if you even start to lift, but you eat too much and then it's going to be bad for your kidneys. And then, you know, it's all these things. And then I'm like, what am I supposed to eat? And I became almost like this afraid of like to even eat anything because I didn't know what I was allowed to eat, what was healthy, what was, you know, considered safe. Mm-hmm. And I think that many of us, and especially women, because we have this, you know, societal pressures and expectation that we're supposed to look a certain way, act a certain way, dress a certain way, like all these things. And, you know, if you were not mindful, and, you know, I'm speaking on this behalf because like I fell victim to all of that. And essentially that had inspired me, you know, for my story, Chasing Perfection. And in my book, you know, Chasing Perfection, it's a journey to healing, fitness, and self-love. And it took a lot of the undoing and the unlearning and rewiring and reprogramming so many of those false beliefs and myths so that I could start now learning to approach food, not from a place of fear, but of love and nourishment and health and optimal performance and all the things that we, you know, essentially through our, you know, through our own doing, we become our own first health advocates. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to share some of those beliefs and myths also to note of, or to, in addition to the things that I had shared, because if, for those that are listening, if you're even on the fence of this, or have heard this, or even some of that negative self-talk in your own mind that said, well, we can't eat that. We want to help debunk some of these myths and challenge you to really start looking at food from a place of what it is. It's food, it's nourishment, it's health. Mm-hmm. It's there as a way to really feed and nourish from the inside out. So I love your perspective on this as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, your story of chasing perfection and trying to move away from that is the same story in the nutrition space too. And I think, you know, a common pitfall we can fall into when we're trying to better our health is that we try to do that perfectly too. You know, maybe we have some symptoms going on, you know, specific to my work, this might look like irregular cycles or really symptomatic cycles or fertility issues, for example. And maybe some of the things that led us to that hormone dysregulation were the level of perfectionism we were striving for elsewhere in our lives, creating so much stress on our system that it impacted our hormones. And then we're like, okay, I'm going to dig into the food stuff. I'm going to really fix this. And then we try to do that so perfectly, where we're like white knuckling it through these rules that we think mean perfect health. And something that we talk about with our clients often is that if it was something that got you here, you know, it's not going to get you there, which is a common saying. But with nutrition, if perfectionism landed us in a state of hormone unhappiness, perfectionism is not our way through this either. So really exploring those beliefs we hold around food and about health and about how things have to be perfect for us to be moving forward, and really just relaxing the grip. And like you mentioned too, just changing the way we view food. You know, food is not this I don't know, almighty force that's working against us at all times and trying to trick us into eating the wrong thing. Food is information. Food is telling ourselves what to do. Food is like a log on the metabolic fire. It's really just energy that we're giving our body. So energy and information. And if we want our body to perform really well and feel really well, and we want to have this overflowing energy to pursue our passions in this life, then we have to be nourishing ourselves with food that give the correct energy and information. So that's a big shift, you know, personally that I walked through and that we see with our clients is just that way we view food and perfectionism as it relates to nutrition.
Mm, that's like everything you said is really hitting home. And I remember when, you know, for me, I was using, because of my own personal struggles with body dysmorphia and eating disorders and self-image and all those things, I used food and fitness as a way to control and manipulate my body so that I didn't have to feel the struggle and this, like this internal tug of war. It's like, I want to be set free of these things, but yet I don't know how to go about doing it. And that chase to have this perfect life had led me into my first fitness competition. Mm-hmm. And in that competition, I was perfect to a T. What was written down, I didn't have even like a microgram more than it. If it said like 4 ounces, 4 ounces. If it was 12 almonds, it was 12 of all the same almond size. So I didn't, you know, and I hit this to a T. And the irony of it was that I thought that if I can have this perfect diet, therefore it's going to be a reflection of this perfect chase, therefore the perfect body in the end. And what I learned in this first competition, which was just, you know, you learn a lot and then you know now what not to do. But in this, it was throughout the progress as the competition was, the prep was unfolding, I got to that milestone where I had lost my period. And I was so ecstatic. I thought I hit a milestone. I was like, you guys, I lost my period. That means I'm making progress, right? Yeah. And people are like, you know, because you didn't know what you didn't know. Right. And it was celebrated. It was, yes, you're on track. Keep doing what you're doing. That was like affirmation. Keep going. Yes, the diet sucks. Yeah. This is painful. This sucks as a whole competition. And I remember thinking at this point, it was like, wow, this is going to be epic. This is going to be incredible. And yeah, not to spoil the story, but it didn't turn out the way it was planned. And what I didn't realize at that time was post-competition, how much damage I had actually done on top of the damage for all these decades and of time and just this fight against my body was I didn't have a period. And then when I started to eat again after the competition, how quickly my body rebounded. And I gained this, you know, for me, I'm pint-sized, but a lot of weight back. And so now my hormones are like screaming because they were already screaming and yelling that I lost it. And so I didn't even understand the importance of hormones until that first competition. And now not everybody has a story where it's like, you know, blaring, this is what it is. But I think for those that are listening, listen to what Kaylee's saying is because we see how our hormones are affecting just, you know, our relationship with ourselves, our menstrual cycle, our emotions, our mental ability, like if we have brain fog, if we're just, you know, we're getting cloudy, and then also our physical performance. So, you know, I look back, you know, our best teacher is hindsight, right? So we learn so much of that. And so I realize now the importance of prioritizing health and wellness with a focus on nutrition and optimal, you know, I would take the approach of healthy, nutrient-dense foods. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we could interject here just a moment, sometimes we don't even know what food is.
Yeah.
I think that that's something we definitely should talk about because when we go to the grocery store, we can see labels and we think that these are healthy because it says healthy. Or maybe we're shopping the internal aisles of a grocery store and we don't realize that, no, that's not really food. That's like man-made boxed or you know, instant. So I'm just sharing pieces of that because I think in the relatability is like we're from different seasons in our life, different experiences and whatnot. But the overall takeaway is to really pull yourself out of the situations that you're in or the experiences you've gone through and try to view food and nutrition through a different lens and one that is more of the education and information versus fear and the marketing ploys, you know, that want to get you thinking that these things are going to get you the results, and they're not.
Yep, totally. And I think what you mentioned with that experience that you had, where you had a stark kind of end to hormone production,
yeah,
when you lost your period, and then, you know, when they come back online, like, they were still there trying to fight for you, yelling in the background, and so now they're yelling even louder. So I'm sure that came with some symptoms. But I think unless you've had an experience where you lost your period, or maybe you've been on birth control or some other instance where we've had like manipulation of hormone production, you get a clear example of really what they do for us. But a good way to think about our hormones is they are the interface between us and how we interact with the world around us. So you mentioned like brain fog and just brain function being something so influenced by hormones, which is huge. Our energy, even our metabolism, is greatly influenced by our hormones. So, you know, the amount and type of fuel that we burn really well, how we relate with those around us, our like personal relationships, how we're showing up at work, how confident and extroverted we might feel at different phases of the menstrual cycle. So hormones are like the middle person between you and the way you show up in your life. And, you know, my goal, at least for myself, and I know it certainly is the case for our clients, is we want to be able to show up fully with that full cup, you know, that's running over with energy, so that we can show up with confidence, with vitality, and have enough left over that we're not just getting through the to-do list for the day, but we've got room for our passions, our hobbies, our families, the people that are important in our lives, instead of just barely getting through the day.
I love that. Yeah. And that's, you know, taking that step back and recognizing, you know, more or less take an assessment of your life, those listening, like those that are in there. How does life feel? Does it feel chaotic? Does it feel like you're stressed out? Does it feel like you're running on fumes and burnout is a frequent visitor? Does it feel like there's, you know, you're just going through the day and then you're not even eating? You know, we might just, you know, plow through the day and have one meal at the end of the day because you have 15 minutes to squeeze in something to eat. I know that, you know, our listeners, as well as myself, it's like we are those go-getters. We're high achieving women. We got a lot of things to do. And, you know, sometimes we don't think to eat, and I'm guilty of it.
Yep.
It just, you're like, whoa, how did the time just fly? But it's about, you know, kind of being on top of that. And I think if we're not mindful of it, our body will tell us. There will be signals and alarms that are piping up trying to get your attention. And I think that many of us don't even realize that we're getting the message until we're on fumes and we're hitting burnout. And we say, how did I get here? And we could think it's all the things, but it's really how your body can only go so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vehicle. It's a vessel, right? It has to be nourished. So those listening are like, yeah, that's me right now. Okay, take that step back a moment and ask yourself, are you eating today? What are you eating? How often are you eating? What kind of foods are you eating? And I think that's, you know, as Kaylee's pointing out, those are the whispers until they become those blaring alarms. And we don't want to go there.
Yeah, totally. And gosh, that burnout feeling is just so prevalent in the high achieving women group.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tend to be burning the candle on both ends and just doing a lot. And I think it's possible to do a lot and have big goals, but it does require a lot more diligence with the nourishment side. Because, you know, from a like stress and burnout perspective, we have a group of stress hormones that the body can fall back on during seasons of stress. And when we are running on stress hormones purely, we are not running on sex hormones, which is the estrogen and progesterone that we were talking about as influencing the way we show up in life and our relationships. And so it's always one or the other. So if we've trained the body to lean only on stress hormones because maybe we're not eating for the whole day, or we're just eating little bits maybe toward the end of the day, or we're not hydrated, we're not getting any minerals in, or maybe we're never seeing the sun, we're just sitting behind a computer the whole day, all of those things would contribute to that stress hormone picture. And it feels good at first to be on stress hormones if you've ever had those really like busy seasons of life where we're just doing so much. We feel energetic and motivated, and oftentimes you don't even have much of an appetite because you're running on these stress hormones that suppress it. So it's a slippery slope because it feels good until the wheels fall off, and then they do fall off, and all of a sudden we are like flatlined with energy. We can't keep up with the demands of those stress hormones. And now all of the neglect that we gave ourselves over the subsequent months shows up pretty loud and clear. So I know for me personally, I used to thrive on that high cortisol, high adrenaline physiology. And when I transitioned away from that, I almost had to reinvent myself again, because it was like, who am I if I'm not overcommitting? Who am I if I'm not running 100 miles an hour? And sometimes that feels really, really uncomfortable at first. And I just want to normalize that aspect of this conversation too.
Ooh, I love that you brought that up, because that's something that's near and dear to me. And I can probably talk about this like for hours on end. When you ask yourself, who am I? That question of identity brings forth like that there's something now wrong with you, because it's like, why couldn't I figure this out? Why couldn't I achieve this? Why couldn't I have done this? You know, and we don't realize. So now we're taking it as like something personal, that there's something broken, wrong, or just stuck and we can't break through. And, you know, that what produces more of our stress hormones.
Yeah.
And we go through this cycle and cycle and cycle. And so, yeah, it's, you know, burnout again. It is really the bottom line of where we're headed if we don't, you know, if we're not proactive and take precaution and choosing to fuel our bodies. And sometimes, you know, for me, I have to set alarms because I will forget. I will just, time will slip by. And, but it's things like that, that now you start learning to implement different tactics and strategies and tips and tools into your life so that you, you know, yes, it might seem like an interruption, like, hey, I'm busy with work. It's in flow. But at least now that bell went off. So now it's ruminating in the back of my mind. It's like, yeah, it might not be another hour until I can eat, but at least I know in an hour I'm going to eat. But it's keeping that at the forefront. And so I would love for you to share some of the strategies and some of your takeaways and tips that you can implement, start implementing into our everyday busy lives.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So this list would be applicable if you resonate with either the like high stress, lots of adrenaline in the system, or we've already hit burnout, or you're dealing with significant hormone symptoms, because the hormone symptoms are a manifestation of that whole stress hormone cascade. These are not separate things. They go hand in hand. And so the first step is just creating safety in the body. That's really our main goal and really what every item on this list accomplishes. But the first thing would be we have to eat enough to support our basic function and metabolism. And so that number or that amount is obviously going to look different from person to person, depending on the body they're in, the season they're in, the types of movement and demands on their schedule. But playing around with what it looks like to eat actually three full meals each day, or maybe we have three full meals and a couple of snacks. A secondary goal with eating enough is keeping blood sugar steady, because when blood sugar drops, we call up those stress hormones again. So it's another opportunity to create safety. And we do that by eating meals that contain carbs, proteins, and fats together so that they digest nice and slow and keep our blood sugar steady. And this pattern starts with breakfast. So for our clients, we're saying a balanced protein-rich breakfast within an hour of waking is a non-negotiable to not start that stress hormone roller coaster throughout the rest of the day. And if we can get that protein-rich breakfast in within an hour of waking, then we're going to keep that pattern going about every 4 or 5 hours or so throughout the day. We'll know we've successfully did that when we get to the next meal feeling like, yeah, I could eat, but not, oh my God, if I don't eat, I'm going to like eat this chair that I'm sitting on or the first thing that I find in the pantry. We don't want to hit that level of ravenous because that tells us that our blood sugar is low and now we've called up those stress hormones. So again, thinking about the size and composition of the meals and then the frequency of them, that first morning meal is a really crucial step. The next thing I would recommend is actually making sure we're not having caffeine on an empty stomach first thing in the morning. That's another recipe for stress hormone waves all day. So we'll keep that morning caffeine to either with our breakfast or shortly after. That was a big change for me. I used to be like a coffee drinker on my road to work and I would feel all jittery because I was hanging out with all the cortisol in my system, and it makes a big difference to delay that until with or after our meal. The next thing on the list is actually minerals. So hydration is important, of course. I think that's something we're all familiar with, but we actually need minerals with our water in order to get that water into our cells. And we need minerals to combat that stress response. So when we are running on stress hormones, we burn through minerals like sodium, potassium, and magnesium really quickly. And most of our plain water is stripped of its minerals in its purification and processing steps. So adding a pinch of quality salt to a big bottle of water or any of the number of like mineral or hydration powders that are on the market can do this as well. But actually getting that mineral repletion helps us better buffer stressors as they come up throughout the day. That's that absolute game changer with our clients, is just bringing more attention to minerals. And then the last thing I will say, just so we don't have a 10 bullet point list, would just be to break up computer time and spend some time outside. And we're recording this in the winter, so the best we can, given the climate that we're in right now. But humans were not supposed to be in captivity the way we are today, where we are inside in front of computers under fluorescent lighting. We're really supposed to be connecting with nature and the cyclical nature that we also mirror for women with menstrual cycles. So stepping outside, seeing the sun, if we can get barefoot on the earth, even better. But those things really help shift our nervous system into that rest and digest state, and can be a really nice down regulation tool if you had a really intense call or intense work day and you just need help getting out of that fight or flight.
Ooh, I love this. I'm jotting down like all these notes, and these are, if for those listening, go back after this episode and grab a pen and notebook, because these are such great, valuable takeaways. And as I'm jotting them down, I do have a couple questions too, because I'm thinking, you know, what if somebody, they're like, great, this is all great information, but I'm still confused. It's like, what should I eat? What would be an ideal meal? What is enough? Like, and again, that's really dependent upon the individual. And I want to talk about, you know, we talk about the calories, right? So every individual has their own daily caloric intake, and that's set based off of your height, weight, age, activity level.
Yep.
What else am I missing? That's it, right?
I think that's it. Yep. You got it.
Yep. And so that is determined how many calories your body needs per day, just to exist, to breathe and your organs moving and all that stuff. When we're depriving our body and we go below our metabolic, you know, intake, that is something where many of us women, we think, well, I'm so confused, because for me to lose weight, I need to eat less. And so they just eat basically like a handful of granola or something like that. And then that's what they're intaking. So I want to talk briefly about that, because I want to stress the importance of hitting those numbers regardless, because this is why you're not losing weight. And this is where the plateau, where we find ourselves plateauing, we're frustrated and we think that we need to do more. So then we'll go hit the gym and we'll try to burn off more excess calories. But the reality of it is you're not even hitting the bare minimum. So I want you to, you're the specialist here. I'm just the personal experiencer of doing this multiple times.
That's important.
Right. And I had to learn from my own, because I didn't understand. So, and I do want to make that a note as well, is that you could take the advice from other people, but for you to actually implement, you have to be your own advocate and learn this on your own, because nobody could teach you. They can only teach you what they know and what is applicable from their experiences. But for you to kind of undo some of that damage or those myths and beliefs and the things that you want to really step into this, you know, confident version that is holistically whole and feeling at their optimal best, this is a self journey. And I want Kaylee to kind of touch on that, but I'd love for you to talk about the calories first, because I think that that's our baseline to start before we get into what are our calories, what should they consume or consist of, what kind of foods. We'll get there, but first things first.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you asked this, because I think when you understand this concept, the rest of this falls into place a lot easier. And this comes down to metabolism and some of the safety mechanisms that the body has. So I think in school, and probably most like diet literature, we try to think about the human body as a math equation, like X amount of calories in versus X amount of calories burned equals either weight gain or weight loss. And if you have dieted in your life, you've probably learned that doesn't always hold true. And maybe you're eating less and less and less, but you're not seeing weight come off. You might actually see weight go the opposite direction. And you're like, what in the world is going on here? So your body, particularly females, this is a big difference between men and women when it comes to nutrition. Your body is always assessing energy availability. And if we have less energy coming in because we are dieting, or we're just busy and not remembering to eat, then our body has our back and actually will slow your metabolic rate down to try to match what's coming in. Because if it doesn't do that, we're likely to not survive this period of kind of pseudo starvation that we've created for ourselves. And it's a really great feature that the body has for, like, ancestrally speaking, survival situations where food was scarce, where there was a famine, or just situation where we didn't have access to food. And now we're modern humans that generally have access to the food that we want. But if we are choosing to undereat, we're just ratcheting down that metabolism. And that means if we want to continue to lose weight, we have to keep eating less and less and less until we keep getting under that threshold. And there's a limit to how far we can go with this before the wheels fall off, of course. And so instead of playing that game of how much can I restrict to try to outsmart this body, instead, if we invest the time, energy, and resources in building that metabolism up, then we can maintain a healthy body composition while eating enough to support not just existing, but thriving in our lives. So we want to build that intake up. And that's why we don't want to be eating below our estimated calorie needs, which it's based on all the factors that you shared. And it's just an estimate. If you're curious, there are all kinds of online calculators for this where you can throw your data in and it will crunch a number. And I think as much as we don't get into calorie counting in our practice, it can actually be a really eye-opening thing to see what an active adult female actually needs just to exist. And if you contrast that number, which is typically like in the realm of 2,000 calories for an adult female, with the dieting advice, which is typically like 12,000 calories type stuff, you realize how easy it is to create that metabolic downturn that's really hard to recover from and so frustrating because you're applying so much effort and just not seeing a return on it.
Yes, I thank you for sharing that. And you know, again, going back to what is, you know, placated across, you know, the industry that, you know, we've been quote unquote like brainwashed into thinking that we need to all fit into this one same size box. Well, I mean, for reference, I'm 5'1" on a good day. I'm not going to take in 2,000 calories. Right. That is not applicable to me. Just like if somebody is 6'1", they're not going to take the 1,200. So it's very confusing, especially in the female dominated areas, because there is just, and now again, I can't really speak from the male's perspective. I'm sure there's disordered eatings and expectations mm-hmm. and things like that. But from the female perspective, we're supposed to be smaller. The smaller we are, the prettier we are, the leaner, all these things, the more errs. And, you know, that, to be honest, was part of my chase because I thought that I had to do those things. But we're bringing up those numbers because we hear this, you know, it's on a 2,000 calorie diet. Doesn't mean you eat 2,000. If that's applicable to you,
yeah,
great. That's your adherent. Right. 1,200 calories. If that's not applicable to you, again, it doesn't matter. So I know for back in the day when I was doing my fitness health coaching mm-hmm. and I have the nutrition, daily caloric intake and nutrition calculator on my website. If I could find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But that was one of the things. So we calculated that based off of your intake. So again, your height, your weight, your activity, and your age. And it gave you at least a starting point. Doesn't mean that that's where you belong, but many people don't know where they start. I know for me, when I first started back on, you know, actually hiring a coach, because I was, obviously, I didn't know what I was doing or else I would have not been there. When she gave me back my daily caloric intake, I almost lost it. I was like, are you kidding me? She goes, no, this is where you need your baseline. And I was like, I'm barely even making half of that. And she goes, exactly. Yeah. Because that was the eye opener, is what you just said. You know, it's like we don't realize, and it seems like that number seems so monumental that, like, how am I even going to eat that much? Because when you've been in starvation mode this whole time, yes, that seems like an unsurmountable amount of food. Like, how am I going to eat this much? But your body requires that. And when you keep feeding it, you're going to notice a difference within a matter of like a week. And then the more you keep that up, your body starts responding and you realize now it's not about the weight loss. The weight loss actually will come once you actually start eating more, and people are blown away by this. Like, how is this possible? Because it's what Kaylee just said. We've been conditioned into the starvation mode that our body is shutting down. And that's why it's holding on, because it doesn't know when it's going to be fed again. So first things first, that is the daily caloric intake just to keep your body alive and breathing and feeding your organs and nourishing your mind. And that's one of the things when we recognize like brain fog, that should be the first signal, like, ooh, I'm probably not eating enough.
Yep.
So totally. Now that we talked about that, I want to move on now to let's talk about macronutrients. And I know this is going to be a little bit sciencey here for a moment, but we're hoping that you see how we're walking you up this diet recovery hormonal balance ladder to help you get to where you need to be. So when we talk about macronutrients, macronutrients are exactly, you know, they're your proteins. There's three, break them up into three: protein, carbs, and fats. All three of those combined is actually what your daily calories are. So think of it as your calories as a baseline. And what do calories consist of? Macronutrients. And your macronutrients are those priority, you know, like Kaylee said, prioritizing protein. Can we talk about protein here for a moment?
Yes. Yes, this is the most under-eaten macronutrient for women, unless we're being really, really focused on this. I think because protein is typically our like animal products, so our meats, our fish, our eggs, plant-based options would be more like beans, legumes, that kind of stuff. And those tend to not be foods that we crave or think about when we're hungry, and they typically require some prep. We usually have to cook them. There's usually other steps involved, so it can be very easy to be low protein. And protein is such an important macronutrient because it's a big part of our blood sugar stability. So again, our goal is stable blood sugar so we don't rely on stress hormones all day. It is stimulating to the metabolism, and it helps maintain or build lean muscle mass. So when we want to build this robust metabolism so that we've got this like blazing energy and it's easy to maintain a healthy body composition without starvation attempts, we have to be getting enough protein in to build the scaffolding of that metabolism and maintain that lean muscle mass, which again is something that women have to generally try a little bit harder with than men do, both in getting enough protein and keeping the muscle mass that they have. And so we like to see our clients get, you know, 20 to 30 grams of protein in each of their meals. And if you have not tracked that before or looked, even just Googled like a visual of what 20 to 30 grams of protein looked like, you might find that that has been underrepresented on your plate. And if we can just start getting that squared away at our meals, we will feel a difference in that in a matter of a week's time as well. A lot more mental clarity, blood sugar stability, usually a stable mood because protein builds neurotransmitters in our brain. And then we feel more satiety from our meals.
Mm, yes. And also when we start recognizing what we're eating, we can have visual cues. So we can start eyeballing our food and recognizing like, okay, you know, a 4 ounces of chicken fits within that 20 to 30 grams of protein. So what does a 4 ounce cooked piece of chicken look like? You know, typically the size of, you know, the palm of your hand. And so you now have a visual in your hand, for example, now a visual on your plate. So you can start eyeballing, oh, that's roughly for, you know, 4 ounces of chicken. And so you start learning these things. And so, you know, again, it's not something that you're going to learn in a weekend, probably not even in a week. It's about the continual mindfulness and the practice of keeping that at the forefront, prioritizing protein. And to Kaylee's point, many of us don't eat enough protein. And especially if we're looking, you know, we're going to the gym or we're doing all the you know, lifting weights and running or whatever your exercise regimen is, and we're not seeing the result, it's probably because we're not prioritizing protein as one of the macronutrients that are making up your daily caloric intake. And so just brief side tangent here, when we're talking about the daily caloric intake for simple math purposes, if your intake is 1500 calories, we want to, when Kaylee was talking about prioritizing a well-balanced meal, let's just say 500 of those calories come from protein source, 500 calories come from a fat source, 500 calories come from a carb source. Holistically speaking, you've now your intake for that day is 1500 calories. That's the math here. So moving on to protein or to fats and carbs.
Yeah. These are the more fun macros in terms of the foods that you choose. These usually are things we're more excited to eat. So carbohydrates would be things like fruits, breads, grains, rices, that kind of stuff. And carbohydrates are foods that digest into glucose in the system. So this is what raises blood sugar for us. And again, our theme is stability of blood sugar across the day. We don't want high highs or low lows. And so we make sure we don't get either of those by pairing those carbs with protein, which we already discussed, and fats. So fats are things like olive oil and coconut oil, nuts and seeds, butter, ghee, the things that usually add a lot of flavor and satiety to our meals. This is what helps things stick around with us longer. And fats build our sex hormones. So we literally can't make things like estrogen and progesterone without enough fat because they require a cholesterol backbone. And fats help us absorb fat-soluble vitamins, which are really important ones for not just women's health, but health in general. So we've really hit the sweet spot if we see representation from protein, carbohydrates, and fats within the same meal. We get a nice slow digestion to keep blood sugar steady, to keep us full and fueled longer, and to give us raw materials for hormone production.
Yes, fats are our friends, especially females. We need that. We need that. And also, you know, it feeds and nourishes our mind, right? Our brain thrives off of fats. Like, we need those fats. Our joints are very happy when they're lubricated with fats. Yep. And also, you can get your fats from your animal proteins, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I love chicken thighs because I'm getting the best. I'm getting my protein, but I'm also getting my fat, right? So we can get them from different sources. So it's not isolated just carbs and not, you know, fats and proteins. And that's not to say, like, you know, your carbs may have some protein in it as well. So you're just, you know, when you start looking at the nutritional value of each food product that you're eating, food source, you'll see, okay, so that's 20 there, 2 from here, 7 from that thing. Okay, I just took in 29 grams of protein.
Right.
And it's very, very simple once you kind of understand the basics of math. And we're not here to try to overwhelm you, but kind of really highlight and not just glaze over. So I like that we're kind of digging a little bit deeper here to help our listeners to really understand so they weren't prepared for some math and science. Well, here we are. And just briefly, can you share what would be a typical ideal, well-balanced day? Let's just use the examples for a breakfast, lunch, and a dinner.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe a couple snacks.
Oh, yeah. We definitely
have. We love snacks.
Yes. So when we are working with clients to build that hormone supportive eating plan, we really want to stick with foods that are as close to their original form as possible, meaning how you would find this in nature. So an example of this would be like an apple versus like an apple fruit snack versus like apple flavored cereal. We want to stick to like the closest end of the spectrum where things haven't been messed with. Now, there's going to be time and place for some processed foods, too. But I think earlier on in our conversation, you talked about shopping that perimeter of the grocery store being things that typically require refrigeration because they haven't been processed or treated with any preservatives. So starting with breakfast or starting actually with how we begin our day, within an hour of your eyeballs opening, we want to have a meal that contains, again, 20 to 30 grams of protein and then some carbs and fats with it. So an example of this could be, you know, 2 to 3 eggs, or maybe we do 2 eggs and add 2 egg whites just to get us closer to that full amount of protein. Maybe we do some fresh fruit on the side for our carb, and maybe we do a little bit of cheese on top of those eggs for our fat. And then we've got our great breakfast. And if you are a coffee drinker or a tea drinker, now we can have that either alongside the meal or shortly after so that we're not messing with our stress hormones. And then, you know, 3 to 4, potentially even 5 hours later, depending on how satiated you feel, we're coming up to our next meal. And so at lunchtime, maybe we're doing that, you know, 4 ounces of chicken, whether it's, we'll do chicken thighs for the sake of our discussion here, because let's be real, chicken breasts taste like nothing. They taste like whatever you seasoned it with.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
So chicken thighs, which is providing us our protein and also some fat, which is great. Maybe we're having that with some rice on top of, you know, a handful of greens, which we didn't really talk about where that falls into the spectrum, but our non-starchy vegetables are a bit in a category of their own. They're not contributing significantly to any macronutrient. They're just bringing in some antioxidants and some fiber for you. So we've got a bed of greens, some rice, some chicken thighs, and maybe some avocado on top. And then let's see, a couple hours later, we're looking for a snack, maybe while we're working. And for snacks, we're not quite as strict about there being all 3 macronutrients. We could get away with 2 if that's a little bit easier. Maybe it's a like meat stick or jerky for some protein, or a yogurt for some protein with some fruit on top. And then at dinner, we're looking for that same formula as well. So maybe we did piece of salmon, which is, you know, protein and some fat. Maybe we did a baked sweet potato for our carb. Maybe we did maybe some non-starchy veggies on the side too. So again, some maybe green beans and then a little bit of butter on that sweet potato too, to just bring more fat into the meal. And then the only thing I would add to that day is, again, the importance of bringing some minerals in to help buffer the effects of stress. So maybe that was using some good salt on our meals, pinch of salt in our water, adding things like potassium or magnesium to our water as well can really help.
Yes. And I'm over here thinking, I'm like, that's what I'm going to have for dinner later.
So me too, where it came from.
And right before we hit record, I was just finishing up my chicken thighs and my salad, and I had kind of a fattier dressing on that as well. Yeah. So it's, you know, prioritizing again the things that are in your fridge. Yes, they do require some thought behind it to prep or to cook. And that's not to say you have to do this every single day and interrupt your busy, we get a busy lifestyle. But maybe you set a couple hours aside somewhere throughout the week. Maybe we find it mostly on a Saturday or Sunday. And we can prep the meats ahead of time, where now we don't have to think about that. They're already prepared. We can easily toss them on a salad, heat them up as a side or to accompany, you know, our dinner or something like that. And so we don't have to make more work for us, but our goal is to set you up for success. So it's that taking that approach of work smarter, not harder, because we know sometimes it's harder to go against the grain when our body is fighting us, right? And that it's telling us we need food, and you're not giving it food. And so that's, you know, essentially, again, kind of to recap as we wrap up today's conversation, to help you prevent that operating in stress, to help you prevent hitting burnout and keeping you, again, at your optimal best by fueling and nourish your mind, body, and soul with whole holistic foods, nutrient dense, prioritizing the nutrition over the convenience, and setting yourself up for success from that point on. And of course, you know, our goal of this in today's conversation is obviously to shine light on the education, understanding that you got two different perspectives, two different experiences. And, you know, Kaylee had to learn from her own personal experience, and this is what she does. I learned from a lot of the mishaps and the struggles that I had to overcome, and I had to be the first person to step up the plate and say, you know what, you can't teach me. I have to learn this on my own. And so, you know, in context of, you know, struggling decades of eating disorders and disordered eating, I can now say I'm almost coming up on 10 years of complete food freedom, because I had to set myself free by educating and informing and doing the work up front. So if that's you who's still stuck in this cyclical battle of diet and this unattainable chase of perfection, that's almost the self-fulfilling prophecy of, well, here I go again. It's just going to be a thing. I lost 5 pounds, I gained 10, I lose 5 pounds and net, you know, 2. And so we keep, or, you know, net 5, but you're keeping the cycle going. And that is not a way of living. That is not healthy. It's not sustainable in any terms. So we hope that today's conversation has really helped shine some additional light, and we go peel back some of the layers. And to note, I would encourage you guys to go back through this episode, because Kaylee has dropped tons of nuggets of information, wisdom, tips, strategies, all of this. And so this episode isn't, you know, if you're listening in your car, please take time to do it when you have a notebook and pen to really educate and inform yourself as well. So Kaylee, I'd love for you to kind of close us out with some final remarks. And of course, how people can learn more about you, because you are just like a wealth of knowledge and wisdom here. I'm sure that our people are going to be like, well, I want to learn more. How can they connect with you?
Sure. Yeah. I think the only thing that I would end with is just a reminder that there's so much possible for you. And I think if we look at athletes, these high performing athletes, like their nourishment plan is a non-negotiable for them, and it should be the same no matter what particular goals you're reaching for. Particularly for women, we have to have adequate nourishment to have enough hormone production to really show up the way we want to in this life. Then that's what this world really needs: well-nourished women that feel great in their skin. And this is just one step toward that. And if you found this interesting and you want to learn more, we do a lot of free educating over on Instagram. So that would be my best recommendation for you, is to find me there. It's at Kaylee RD. So Kaelyrd. My website is the same name too, so you can find it there. And that's where you'll get a lot of free educational content and resources to help you on your journey. If you're looking for more personalized support, you'll see a couple different options for ways that my team and I can support you on there too.
Awesome. Well, of course, all that will be in the show notes below. So be sure to check that out and give Kaylee a follow. And if you've connected with her, be sure to pop into her inbox. Let her know that this episode resonated. And of course, this is what we do. Our goal is to provide value and information and just helping you to become your best, most confident self. So thanks for listening. Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.